Welcome to Stunt Stories. I'm Corey Eubanks. And typically, about right now, I'd be saying, I've got a very special guest with me today, but I don't. Just me. Because I wanted to announce something and talk about it with you guys and let you know what I've got going on. It's never been something on my bucket list to do in my lifetime. It's something that actually it was my ex-wife's idea for me to put on a car crashing clinic. Now, what does that mean? A car crashing clinic. It's not a precision driving school. There's some of those out there that are very, very good, and I highly recommend that you go to them. It's really good to learn from different people. There's different ways to tie your shoes, different ways to get dressed in the morning, or not, don't get dressed at all. That it's just things that work for some people don't work for others. And it's really good to see how everyone else, performs with a vehicle, what's their technique or their methodology of making a vehicle do something. And it's a pretty filled, market, I guess. There's a lot of really good stunt driving schools, but I don't know of one ever. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe you guys can let me know and give me a comment or something and say, oh yeah, Corey, hey, there's lots of car crashing clinics. I don't think there's ever been one. I don't know of one. So I'm putting one on. And what I'm going to do is over this 2-day clinic, actually I have three of them, but the first three are actually, they're sold out. My first one is on April 29th and 30th in California, and then May 27th and 28th, also in California. That one's sold out as well. And then June 25th and 26th. So my first three clinics are all sold out. What does that mean? I'm only taking 12 students per clinic. I don't want to have too many so everybody doesn't get enough time practicing the things that we're going to be practicing and learning. So the thing is that I believe that is happening now is there is a growing demand for younger stuntmen and stuntwomen to perform the big vehicular stunts. And what are those? What's a big vehicular stunt? In my opinion, a big vehicular stunt would be like a high-speed pipe ramp, a cannon roll, a sidewinder, or a big, big jump. When I say a big, big jump, 150, 200 feet from ramp to ground. That's what I consider a big jump. And these vehicular stunts are still being executed today on feature films and TV shows. It was just a week and a half ago, I did a cannon roll on a show called Lone Star 911. And these vehicular stunts are still being done. They're still in demand. But the select little group of people, of stuntmen and stuntwomen who have been performing these vehicular stunts, these big vehicular stunts, are getting too old. Myself included. I just turned 60 years old. I shouldn't be cannon rolling cars at 65 miles an hour or doing pipe ramps and launching a vehicle 35 feet in the air and then crashing into the ground. I've shook my head enough. It's time to have the next generation coming up. And some people will argue that, well, there's not really going to be a demand for that because it's all going to be CGI. And to what my response is, bullshit. That's right, bullshit. No. I asked Michael Bay that. We were on a Transformers set, and I asked him, I said, Michael, you know how they have these motion capture suits for people to wear? And then the computer guys just kind of use it as a tracking device. And then they build a robot or a monster around it. I go, they have that for vehicles. You know that you could do that. You could take one of these motion capture cars and has the dots all over it, and you could shoot it. And then when you're in post-production, you can make that a Bugatti or a Ferrari or a Lamborghini or whatever kind of car, you know, that you want it to be, a Charger. I mean, some kind of anything. And he goes, I would never, this is Michael Bay now. He goes, I would never not shoot practical cars. He goes, CG looks fake because these young guys who are designing the stunts and designing the action don't understand physics. They don't understand the mechanics of a vehicle, and it just looks like shit. Now, he does put CG cars in his movies, interwoven with the real vehicles that we can enroll and crash on the Transformers set. And I've done every single Transformers movie that Michael Bay's directed and performed a lot of vehicular stunts for him. Probably the most fun I've ever had in my career has been working for Michael Bay. It's like playing in the Super Bowl. You got to have your game on, and he's very intense, very fast, wants to do big stunts every day. And it's really been an exciting thing working for him on those films. But it was also encouraging to hear a director like that say, oh, no, I want to shoot practical cars. I want to do real stunts. I know that the CG doesn't look exactly the same. The vehicles look weightless. And also, you never know what a vehicle is going to do and how it's going to react and the debris that's going to fly off of it when it really happens for real. And also, one of the enjoyments of making movies and TV shows is doing real action. I mean, directors get pumped up. They get excited. I remember the look on Ron Howard's face. You know, John Woo and the late Tony Scott, these guys that love to shoot action. They want to be involved, and it's exciting. It's not going anywhere. It's evolving. You know, there's a lot of technology now that stuntmen and stuntwomen are on wires and these decelerators and all kind of, you know, and the safety equipment has advanced, but there is still a need for vehicular stunts. And there's still going to be, I believe, for another 10, 20, 25 years, maybe longer. And I say that when we started doing pipe ramps. Now, for those of you who don't know what a pipe ramp is, it's really not even made out of pipe. It used to be the very first pipe ramps, the very first, sometimes they're called, you know, turnover ramps. But to me, a turnover ramp is like a wheel ramp, a ramp that you roll your tire up on one side of the vehicle, and then you kind of turn into it and it flips the vehicle over. That's a rollover ramp or a turnover ramp. A pipe ramp is one that was, the original one was made out of pipe. It was, you know, round tubing, and you hit it with the undercarriage of your vehicle and it would flip it over. And I first was exposed to a pipe ramp on the Dukes of Hazzard television show back in 1981, when Jerry Summers was flipping over a car off this pipe ramp. Now, it was exciting. It was, dangerous, because we were still, the roll cages back in that day, they were still evolving. We were still kind of learning I wasn't building the roll cages. The special effects department and a guy named AJ Thrasher was building all the roll cages for the General Lees. AJ, unfortunately, is no longer with us. Incredible man. Great guy. Love AJ Thrasher. If you didn't like AJ Thrasher, there was something wrong with you, because he was just a great human being. And big guy, big shoulders, used to be a horseshoer. And he would always, when he'd build the roll cages in the General Lee, he'd weld a horseshoe at the bottom of on the floor, kind of in an upside down position, so that the good luck wouldn't roll out. You know, and so I'm like, who's putting these horseshoes inside these vehicles? And Tommy Cimento told me it's AJ Thrasher. So AJ, I wanted to meet the man, because the roll cage that he built when I jumped over a semi-truck trailer lengthwise went 173 feet, and we didn't have the jump ramps right. There was like two sections, and it had too much of a of an angle to it, and it kind of bucked me. It hit, by the time my rear end hit the second ramp, the second section, it hit so hard, it kicked it up over me, and I actually did a front flip, landed on my windshield, and first time I ever got whiplash. And because I didn't have my chin tucked, I was pushing away from the steering wheel because I was afraid that, you know, I saw the ground rushing toward me through the windshield, and I thought, oh my God, I'm going to get crushed. And so I was trying to push away from it. And one of the things I will be teaching in my car crashing clinic is, you know, you keep your chin tucked into your chest. And when your chin is tucked into your chest, and I had a neck collar. I do have a neck collar, but my neck collar that I use, it's out of foam, a high density foam, is actually thinner in the front than it is in the back, which kind of forces my helmet and my head to be pushed forward and my chin into my chest. Because if that's where your chin is, you can't get whiplash. You're already there. It's when you try to push your head backwards and then you hit something and it whips forward. And that is what happened to me, and I got whiplash. But I was most impressed that this roll cage did not collapse. And I said to Tommy Cimino, I'd really like to meet the guy who built this roll cage that saved my life, because I'd like to shake his hand. And AJ Thrasher came out from the effects shop. He was in Burbank. We were shooting out in Westlake, out there behind Lake Sherwood. And he came out and introduced himself and then told me that he actually went to Pierce College with my father, with my dad, Bob Eubanks, and an actor named Wilford Brimley. And they all went to Pierce College together. But anyway, so going back to my belief of what's happening right now, with the small group of people, stunt performers, I'll call them stunt performers because to say stunt men and stunt women, why not just say stunt performers? So these stunt performers that have been doing for the past 2-3 decades, the majority of the vehicular stunts, the big vehicular stunts, myself included, we're all getting too old. And there's going to be a demand for the younger stunt performer that wants to do it, that wants to do the cannon rolls, the high-speed cannon rolls, high-speed pipe ramps, high-speed, you know, sidewinders and jumps. Now, let me just back up for one sec. If you're not familiar, if you're not in the stunt industry and you're listening to my podcast and you're like, Corey, you keep saying these weird things like sidewinder. What the hell? What is a sidewinder? Well, I happen to think a sidewinder is one of the most visually realistic and exciting vehicular stunts. And what that is, it's when there's a parked vehicle, like say a minivan or a Ford Ranger. But let's say envision in your mind a minivan parked along the curb and another vehicle's racing down the street and someone swerves at them and they forces them to, you know, to crank the wheel, and they go right for that minivan. And they crash into it, rip through it, and then their vehicle flips upside down and tumbles down the street. And that's called a sidewinder. And it's really a violent-looking, realistic-looking vehicular stunt that you could also put some pyrotechnic in there on a pressure switch. You could have, you know, like a propane popper, so there's an explosion that looks like the gas tank blew up, and which we've done before. I've done that stunt many, many times and did it for Michael Bay we were in Detroit on one of the Transformers movies. And I will teach the secrets that are involved to setting that up, because you can do it wrong. You can do a sidewinder wrong where you could get hurt. And there's a lot of preparation to the ramp. You only use one ramp, that only one side of the vehicle goes up, and it has to be a certain height and a certain distance from the other vehicle so the two chassis don't hit one another. But I will be teaching what I know from all of the sidewinders that I've done, some that have gone bad, and then you learn from your lessons and your mistakes, and then the ones that have gone beautifully. They were just, you know, it turned out exactly how I wanted it to. And I remember how I did that. You know, and you have to always also study the aftermath. A lot of times people do stunts, big vehicular stunts, and they don't go out and say, okay, well, hey, I was going 57, you know, between 57 and 60, and I hit the pipe ramp and I went this far, and I, you know, and I rotated over one car width and a half, and you could see the divot where it hits the asphalt, and you pace it off and you make mental notes or write them down. So, you know, that size vehicle at that speed got this elevation, went this distance, and then you put that into your mental notebook. So for later on, when they're asking you, well, hey, you know, Corey, where are you going to land? And you have a better understanding of the physics of it because you've taken notes. And there's a lot to be learned from pipe ramps. The angle is everything of the pipe ramp, and where you hit it with the undercarriage of the vehicle is everything. Whether you want to get height or you want to get maximum rotation, there's numerous tricks that you can do. I went and got my old pipe ramp that I had stored out in Palmdale, and a friend named Russell Solberg, he has some property out there, and it was stored out there. It's like a pipe ramp graveyard. I mean, there's like 8 or 9 or 10 out there. Jeffy Danoff, very good friend of mine, stores all of these pipe ramps out there. But this particular pipe ramp is very, very, very special. I'll tell you why. When I was back on the Dukes of Hazzard, it was a Friday, and we wrapped in the afternoon, and I was leaving. And as I was getting ready to leave, walking through base camp, I looked off to my left, and I saw the special effects trailer was open. Excuse me. And in the back, I could see Larry Fuentes and Steve Purcell, the two special effects men working on the Dukes of Hazzard. Great guys. Unfortunately, Steve Purcell is no longer with us. But they were in there, and I just went in to tell them, hey, have a good weekend, to shake their hand. I think they did something special for me that day. I forget what it was, but I just wanted to, you know, show my gratitude and respect, and went in to shake their hands. And they were drawing something on a piece of paper. And I kind of like looked at that, and I go, what are you guys making? And oh, we're designing a new pipe ramp. I go, oh, really? And he goes, yeah. Now, I'm not sure if it was Steve or if it was Larry, but one of them said, we've been studying the footage, and what seems to be happening is the pipe ramps are too short. And when the vehicle is hitting like the driver's side going up and hitting the undercarriage, it is all of that energy is pushing against the back right wheel, which is still on the ground. So the vehicle wants to snap and spin, but it's fighting against itself because the back right wheel is still on the ground. So they said, if we make the spine of the pipe ramp longer so that the whole vehicle could go up the pipe ramp and have that back right tire elevated off the ground, then when it hits the kicker, there's a kicker at the end of the pipe ramp, is a little extension that's about 18 inches long that is usually at about a 30 degree angle. So that when the vehicle hits the pipe ramp, goes up the spine of the pipe ramp, then its whole chassis is now on the pipe ramp, and then the front end A-arm hits this kicker, it'll spin it and rotate it like a bullet. And I thought, wow, these guys are really smart. I mean, you know, it's just they think way outside the box, and they're just incredibly intelligent men. And I thought, wow, that's great. That makes perfect sense. Hey, could I have those measurements that you got? Sure, Corey, here. I go, I'm gonna make that. They go, yeah, go ahead. So I went and I bought a bunch of steel, square tubing, you know, like 2x6 inch and then 2x2. And I think I spent like $750. This is back in 1984, 85. And I, in my barn, had a little workshop down there that was just a mess. But, you know, I had a welder, I had an arc welder because my dad's ranch that, you know, it was all pipe and cable. And when I was a little kid, I learned to arc weld and was pretty good at it. And so I built this pipe ramp. And I made a removable axle so that I could put it on a, you know, and a trailer hitch. So I went, even took it down and got it registered, you know, had lights, turn, you know, brake lights, turning lights, and license plate. It was a legitimate trailer. But when you would pull it to the location where you want to use it, you would just unbolt the axle and move out the pipe ramp and take off the trailer hitch, and you're good to go. And then, so I built this thing, And I started telling different people about it. And everyone was like, look at me like I'm crazy. Well, we were then filming Fall Guy. And I mentioned it to Gary Baxley, who was the stunt coordinator and also the second unit director. I said, Gary, I understand you got a turnover coming up next week. He goes, yeah, the Lance Turner's going to do it. I said, hey, how about we try out my pipe ramp on that? He goes, yeah, that's a great idea. Bring it. So I brought out my pipe ramp. We shot at some park out near Van Nuys, and it was set up in the parking lot to go off kind of down a little embankment into this grass area. And this was the first time this pipe ramp got used. Now, every vehicle that we'd seen previously, the vehicle would go up the pipe ramp, flip upside down, and land on its rooftop. Either stay on its rooftop or do a little backflip and come back onto its wheels. That's about all anybody was doing. That's all on any show you were watching, A-Team, Hardcastle, McCormick, whatever. These were the vehicular stunts, just flipping onto its rooftop. This was the first time a vehicle was photographed hitting a pipe ramp and doing a complete 360 and a quarter and landing on its side and then cartwheeling two times before it settled onto its rooftop. And it looked so spectacular. It looked so violent because it was violent. And everyone was like, holy shit. And I mean, the vehicle, the nose of the vehicle kicks to an elevation about 25 to 30, 35 feet. It gets up there. And it is, if you hit the pipe ramp just right, like right inside the front tire, not towards the middle. If you hit it towards the middle, you're going to go up like you're going to go to the moon. You got to hit more towards the inside of the wheel. And there's many, many tricks to doing this that I'm going to discuss and teach at my car crashing clinic. It's not just going straight. There's ways I'm going to teach the students how you can pitch the weight of the vehicle from one side to the other to compress the suspension so that when you do hit the pipe ramp, it's releasing, and it really makes it look like a really super cool spin in the air, kind of a sideways more spin. But anyway, this pipe ramp was it was the talk of the town. Everyone was talking about it. Some stuntmen were even saying, oh, no, Corey's gone too far. This is too dangerous. They need to chop that thing up. They can't be doing that. That's too dangerous. And I'm like, what are you talking about? These roll cages now we're building are super safe. And I finally got to go off my own pipe ramp on a Glenn Larson production called Highwayman. And I was so excited and took a police car off of it. It did a full 360 and three quarter and then hit and bounced back up in the air and did another spin and hit and bounced back up in the air and then flopped onto its rooftop. And it was a thumper because into the dirt, it really, you know, it's all about disbursement of energy. If you throw a rock down the street on the asphalt and it goes tick, 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 tick before it comes to a stop. It's dispersed all of that energy over a greater distance and numerous times, as opposed to if you take that same rock and you just chuck it into some soft dirt and it all just goes thud. All of that energy stops all at once. And you would think just the opposite. You would think, oh, going off into some nice soft dirt would be great. No, I'd rather hit something hard for the disbursement of energy. And when I did this on Highwayman, that was that show for Glenn Larson, Highwayman, and it hit in the dirt, man, it really snatched me. It was like really, you feel like you hit a wall and then you're in the air, then you hit another wall and then you bounce back up in the air and you hit another wall. Oh, also the thing that was painful is I'd just come back from Chicago on a movie called Poltergeist 3. And I had 18 stitches in my shins. I had 9 on one and 9 on the other from an underwater air ram that had misfired. And the steel plate came up and hit me in the shins. And so every time that vehicle, I mean, I was wearing baseball catcher shin guards. That's what we wear. It's part of the safety equipment. But as my legs would smash up underneath the dash when the vehicle would land upside down, the straps that were on those baseball catcher shin guards were right over my stitches. And I remember that was just like, oh, it's ripping my stitches apart. So That was kind of painful, but it was the first time I got to go off my pipe ramp. I was so excited. And then that ramp, like I said, it was like the talk of the town. People were wanting to call me and rent it and use it on their shows. And I mean, I use it on a movie I was stunt coordinating with Charlie Sheen, a thing called No Man's Land. We even took a school bus off of it, a 36-passenger school bus. We pipe ramped that thing. Bobby Orson pipe ramped it off that. And we've done, back on Fall Guy again, I pipe ramped a CJ5 Jeep over a creek and spun, I don't know, 1 3/4 times, hit cartwheeled. I remember it broke the Jeep's chassis in half. It cartwheeled so hard. It got so much height and I was coming in pretty, pretty, pretty fast. And that's when I learned Jeeps are not your friend when you're doing vehicular stunts. There's not much between you and the ground when you're cartwheeling on your driver's side. There was like, 5 inches and my head was smashing against the ground. This was before I knew about and kind of modified the full containment seat that I use. And I'm going to introduce that to my students at my car crashing clinic. This containment seat that, when I cannon rolled the prison bus on Fast Five, at 60 miles an hour, a 42,000 pound prison bus rolled 3.5 times and, elevated 7 feet in the air by these cannons, and my neck and my head completely fine because I've modified this full containment seat. I did another cannon roll on a TV show. It was down in Albuquerque, New Mexico, called You Better Call Saul. And I took a Bronco and cannon rolled that thing 8 times in this full containment seat and perfectly fine. It's just the same seat structure that I have duplicated this seat. I've got numerous seats that are just the same. And the one I just did on Lone Star 911 about 2 weeks, week and a half ago, same seat. And I'm 60 years old. My neck is perfectly fine. My back is perfectly fine because I've learned from back on the Fall Guy, back on Dukes of Hazzard, all of these shows back in the early 80s, the things that worked and things that did not work. Had I had my full containment seat when I pipe ramped that Jeep on Fall Guy, I never would have hit my head, which I did. I actually got a concussion, had to go to the hospital. They did a CAT scan and had a bruise about the size of a silver dollar on my brain. That's what basically a concussion is. And that was the first time I had to turn down a job for Terry Leonard because I was supposed to, I forget the name of the show. It wasn't Hunter. It was something he was doing. And there was an airplane, a private jet on a runway, and the steps are down. And I think it was Ben Scott was going to tackle me down the steps onto the runway while the plane's moving. And I remember laying in the hospital bed and he had called and I had to turn it down. I said, I'm just not that tough. I'm it hurt just to lift my head. I couldn't imagine Ben Scott just using me as a fall pad going down those steps and flopping onto the asphalt at 10, 15 miles per hour. Did not sound like a fun time, so I didn't do it. So yeah, I get asked that periodically. Are there stunts that you've ever said no to? And I said, yeah, there's lots. That's just one of them. My list of stunts that I've refused to do or chose not to do, that list is quite long, actually. So the other thing I'm going to be teaching at my car crashing clinics is we invented the jump vest on the Dukes of Hazzard, and I modified it because the original jump vest they had was too big. And whenever I wore it, it would slip on me, no matter how tight they would lace it up the front. And what a jump vest is, this one was made out of leather and it had wool, sheep's fur, whatever you call it inside. And it laced up the front and where your shoulder blades are, there were two D rings. And back in the day, they would wrap bungee cord through the D-rings and up over the roll bar, back through the D-ring, up over the roll bar, and then tied into a knot. So you were actually tied into the vehicle. And then you'd put your five-point harness on. And this jump vest would keep your butt about three to five inches up off the seat. And then you would take your lap belt and pull your lap belt and push up against the ceiling to kind of get it so your butt would just make contact with the seat. So you're kind of floating, you're kind of suspended. And when you would hit the jump ramp and flying through the air, you would squeeze your lats, try to and tuck your chin in your neck collar and squeeze the lats so that that jump vest wouldn't slip up. And the idea is when you would land, the bungee cord would keep you from compressing your vertebrae. And there was an incident with a good friend of mine, John Cade, that he had the same system, but we had modified it and made it where we had quick releases so that you didn't have to wait after you did your jump for someone to come in with a knife and cut the bungee cord. You know, God forbid the car catches on fire. How are you going to get out? Well, that's exactly what happened to John Cade. He and I both were using these quick releases, but he had some nylon webbing that was tied to his quick releases so that he would reach up and pull it, and that would release the D-rings so he could climb out of the vehicle. But his were nylon, and his vehicle did catch on fire. There was a bad fuel cell that did not have a crash housing around it. I don't even believe the the fuel cell had a bladder or foam. It was just like this, you know, old white plastic. You know when plastic gets old, it's white, and it gets old, it starts to turn kind of yellow. I recall it was something like that, and you knew it was brittle. But anyway, the weight, he had weights in the back of the vehicle for the jump. He jumped over this truck. The weights, like 450 pounds, maybe more. I can't really recall. It was a long time ago, but it pushed the bumper to the ground. The fuel cell splattered. It, you know, just erupted, and the bumper was dragging, and there's your sparks. And John went out into this field, and the vehicle was on fire, and he was in it, and he was trying to get out, but his nylon strap on his quick releases had melted, so he had no way of pulling it to get out. And it was George Ogburn in the water truck that on set that was able to get close enough that he could hit the side spray and put the fire out to basically, I think, save John's life. So that was something you learn from the mistakes, things that happen. That was a horrific day. But learn from that to now with the quick releases, I have cable loops so that can't burn. If I'm in a vehicle, I jump and there's a fire, I could reach up and pull these quick releases. So there's numerous things that at my car crashing clinic that I'm going to pass on this knowledge, this wisdom, the tricks of the trade, if you will, that I've picked up over the past 41 years from all of the mistakes I've made, from the mistakes I've watched my peers make, from the way the other stuntmen have the equipment they use and the way they go about using that equipment and the way they go about setting up particular stunts, cannon rolls, that seems to be on everyone's bucket list. If you're into vehicular stunts, that's something that you want to do. And I have literally, at the risk of sounding like I'm bragging, but I have literally done so many cannon rolls, I've lost count. But it's still, I think, one of the most technically challenging vehicular stunts to do right. You could do it wrong. There's many, many tricks to it. I started out doing cannon rolls that it was gunpowder and a a chunk of a telephone pole. That's how we first made them. They were building these little bombs out of 6 ounces and putting it on top of a telephone pole and shoving it up into a steel tube in the car, and you would hit a button and it would blow up and shoot that telephone pole up. And really the pressure was not something that was gauged. You couldn't tell. because it really mattered how tightly the bomb was wrapped. If you take 6 ounces of gunpowder and just put it on the kitchen counter and strike a match and hit it, it's just going to flash. It's not going to explode. It's just all going to burn really quick, but it's not going to explode. It's how tightly it's wrapped, like a little firecracker, you know, an M80. So there was no way to regulate or judge, measure how tightly these were wrapped. Well, anyway, so it evolved from that, from the powder cannons went into nitrogen, but then there was different types of cannons, valves. There's a butterfly valve. There's a ball valve. There's all these, and 6-inch ID cannon or 8-inch or a 10-inch. And then how much air pressure you use inside there differs because of the size of the cannon. And I teach this in my car crashing clinic. I actually have some vehicles. I have a special effects friend of mine I highly respect named Jimmy Lorimer. And Jimmy Lorimer, his shop, they built these roll cages for me in these vehicles. The same identical roll cages that we use on the TV and movies. Matter of fact, he built the same exact roll cage for the Cannon roll I just did a week and a half ago on Lone Star. And I'm going to teach the students, when you're looking at a roll cage, to know what you're looking at, to know what kind of tubing it is, how it should be constructed. So you know a good cage from a bad roll cage, because that's the only thing that's keeping you from breaking your neck, you know, smashing your skull if a vehicle is going to be flipping. I have a couple of cars that I have removed the engines and transmission to lighten them up. I put them on a wrap system, run it up through a couple of pulleys, and we snatch these things and they barrel roll, you know, a couple times and cross the ground. And it's not as violent as coming in and doing a 65, you know, mile an hour cannon roll. But it is exactly the feeling and the motion of what's happening is exactly the same. It's just not as violent. So I do that. And really the lesson, the exercise of all of this is to know how to get out of that vehicle. Anybody can be strapped into a car and put all the safety equipment on and your 5-point harness and get all of your safety equipment on and be sent off to go do your sidewinder or to go do your pipe ramp or go, you know, it's when that vehicle then now, because they've incorporated pyrotechnics into it, or maybe the fuel cell on that vehicle does bust open. They do break open. They do bust. It's happened dozens of times. Don't let anybody tell you, oh no, it's a fuel cell, you're safe. Bullshit. They leak when they're upside down. I don't need to go into that now. It's something I'm going to teach at my clinic about how to protect yourself from that. But when you've tumbled a vehicle several times and you're a little disorientated and you're maybe stunned a little bit and you don't know where up and down is or sideways, and all of a sudden there's flames inside your vehicle, smoke, and you're like, oh my gosh, okay, this car is on fire. I need to get out. And it's not as easy as you may think. It's not even easy to get out of a fully caged vehicle when it's on its wheels, when you got to climb out the window. There's actually a trick for that. And it's something you need to know, unless you want to sit there and get burned, or you want to accidentally go off the road and flop into the ocean, which has happened, or into a lake, which has happened, or into a river, which has happened. And you need to get out because that vehicle is now sinking to the bottom and you don't have a pony tank and you're going to drown if you don't know how to get out of that vehicle. So this is what I teach at my car crashing clinics. It's all about repetition. We all know that repetition is the mother of all skill. You got to do it over and over and over, and then you got to do it again and do it over and over. It's why basketball players are shooting hoops every day. It's not that they don't know how, it's muscle memory. And you need, when you're stunned and you need to save your own life, because your safety extraction team doesn't always get there on time, even though their intentions are to get there on time. There's many a time I've seen vehicles come to a rest after a stunt, and I know that there's fuel now leaking on the hot engine manifold. And I know that that could erupt into a flame, into a fire any second, but the director doesn't know. And the director's like, let it roll. Let the cameras roll. Let them roll. And you're like, this is the time you need. Maybe that person's hurt right now. Maybe that the stunt performer inside that vehicle is unconscious and is hanging upside down. And that's how I've had a couple friends of mine go into a coma because they hung upside down in a vehicle too long after they struck their head. And these directors will do that sometimes. And you need to know how to get out. And sometimes they don't let the safety extraction team go in. They tell them, hold it. Wait, guys, we'll tell you when to go in. And that's one of the things at the safety meetings before. And I have a little speech that I'm going to be teaching my students that they need to talk to out loud to the first assistant director and the stunt coordinator about their own safety and what their wants and needs are. Because it's your life. You know, it's your life. It's a stupid TV show. It's a stupid movie, but it's your life. And so that's the most important thing, your safety, your life. And there's certain things that the majority of the people on the set are completely oblivious to because they haven't flipped over a car at a very high speed. They don't know everything that could go wrong or that is about to go wrong. And I teach this at my clinic. I think I was also talking to you about the jump landing simulator that I have. So people I built or had built for me. It's like a giant 10-foot tall steel table that will collapse. So the motion, and it has a roll cage at the top with a seat and steering wheel. It looks like the inside of a vehicle. And so you could use your suspension harness and each student, their weight differs. So how much bungee cord you're going to want to use to suspend yourself up off the seat. You have to play with that. You have to experiment. And that's where you do this. You don't want to be experimenting on a set, not knowing, wow, do I have enough bungee cord or am I going to break my back when I jump this car off this ramp? So this jump landing simulator, although it's 10 foot tall, we could, with the winch, we pull it up just about 2 feet and just release it and let it collapse. It moves forward and comes down. And then, oh, okay, I got that. Feels good. Now lift it up 4 feet, lift it up 6 feet, lift it up 8 feet. You could practice this. You could practice to get it dialed in, to know what it feels like, knowing, okay, I got to, squeeze my lats so my jump vest doesn't slip. That bungee cord's, not giving enough. I want to have a little bit of flex and it's too much. This is what this is all about, baby steps, about experimenting. And I've jumped hundreds of cars. I don't know many people that can really say that from ramp to ground, not ramp to ramp. I've only done that, a couple dozen times, but the majority of the time, I've jumped from ramp to ground and I know what that feels like. And this jump landing simulator that I had built is the closest representation to jumping a real vehicle, without the speed. It's the impact feels pretty much the same. It's violent. It's a 10-foot steel table that's going to fall down and you're riding it to the ground. And it's, but it prepares you. It will prepare you for what to expect. And to know that your jump vest and your bungee system is perfect for you and is going to work. So that's what I'm excited about. I wanted to share with you is that I've got this car crashing clinic. And if you are interested, I'm going to have others. I think my next three, I'm going to put on in Texas. These first three I'm having here in California. But I have a lot of people coming from the East Coast, from New York and from Georgia. I got a gentleman who's flying all the way in from Australia. And I just think that there's so many stunt men and stunt women in New Mexico and in Atlanta, Georgia and on the East Coast. And if I have this in Texas, I think it's more of a neutral spot for everybody. So I think my fourth, fifth, and sixth, that's hard to say, sixth, clinic will be in Texas. And I will announce those dates on the website. If you want to learn more about what I'm doing at my car crashing clinic, I've got a website that's called carcrashingclinic.com, and you could check that out. And hey, I hope that you've enjoyed listening to me ramble on, and I hope that you will tune back in for another Stun Stories. Thank you.